Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Osisko Gold Royalties Q1 2023 Results Conference Call. After the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Please note that this call is being recorded today, May 11th, 2023, at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Today on the call, we have Mr. Sandeep Singh, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Frédéric Ruel, Chief Financial Officer and Vice President Finance. And I would like to turn the meeting over to your host for today's call, Mr. Sandeep Singh. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, et bienvenue à l'appel conférence des résultats du premier trimestre de 2023 de redevances orifères Osisko Limited. Après la présentation, nous procéderons à une séance de questions et réponses. Si vous désirez poser une question, veuillez appuyer sur la touche étoile, suivie du numéro 1. Veuillez prendre note que cet appel est enregistré aujourd'hui le 11 mai 2023 à 10h, heure de l'Est. Nous avons sur l'appel d'aujourd'hui M. Sandeep Singh, président et chef de la direction, et M. Frédéric Ruel, chef de la direction financière et vice-président finance. J'aimerais maintenant céder la parole à votre hôte, M. Singh.
Merci beaucoup, Sylvie. Bonjour tout le monde. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being with us. It's myself and Fred Ruel, as you just heard, that are going to be walking you through the quarter, an excellent start to the year for us. So happy to be giving you that update. The presentation is available on the website, as well as through the webcast as of this quarter. So hopefully you have that in front of you, and we'll be referring to page numbers as we go through things. Starting perhaps with slide 3, as I said, an excellent start to the year. On the left-hand side there, all those high-level metrics had already been released. As again, Fred will walk you through some of the more specifics in a second. Over the quarter, we continued to build up cash and decided to share some of it. By increasing our dividend by just over 9%, we've said it over and over that we continue to prioritize returns to shareholders and look for opportunities to do that and find the right balance in doing that. So very happy to kind of hit the button on another increase after a small hiatus where we were more active on the buyback. So that's positive as well. Very happy to add nominate Norman McDonald to our board of directors, phenomenal individual, phenomenal resource investor in the space for 25 plus years, who many of you would have known through his prior work, whether at Invesco or Teachers or Beutel Goodman, among other places. So a phenomenal addition when he joins in due course after the AGM, and look forward to having him on the team, but also want to thank Charlie Page, who is reaching the tail end of his tenure based on our policies and has decided not to stand for election. He's been a great steward for the company since the creation of Osisko Royalties and the tail end of the Osisko One days. So thank him for his contributions and look forward to adding Norm to the team. Norm would make the seventh new board member in the last circa 3.5 years as part of our board renewal process, and again, strong addition to the team. So with that, I'll pass it on to Fred for the first section to walk you through the quarter, and then I'll pick back up a little bit later on. So Fred, over to you, please.
Thank you, Sandy. Bon matin. Merci de vous joindre à nous pour la présentation de nos excellents résultats du premier trimestre. Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. I'll be brief. The numbers speak by themselves. Let's start with some highlights on slide 3 of the presentation. Slightly above 23,000 GEOs in Q1 2023, an increase of 27% over the first quarter of 2022. Revenues of $59.6 million compared to $50.7 million in Q1 of last year, which translated into cash flows from operations of $45.5 million compared to $40.5 million last year. Our cash margin was stable at 93%. We have repaid an amount of $15 million on our revolving credit facility. And despite that repayment, we ended the quarter with a cash balance of $119 million compared to $91 million on December of last year. On slide 4, We present our geos by asset and by commodity. Gold represented 65% of our geos in the first quarter, silver 22%, and diamonds and other commodities 13%. On slide 5, we present the growth in our revenues and our operating cash flows, mostly as a result of increased deliveries under our royalty and stream agreements. On slide 6, net earnings were $20.8 million, 11 cents per share, compared to $16.8 million, or 10 cents per share last year. Adjusted earnings were $32.6 million, or 18 cents per share, compared to $24.8 million, or 15 cents per share in Q1 of 2022. On slide 7, we have a summary of our quarterly results in details, including 23,000 GEOs compared to 18,250 GEOs in Q1 of last year. Our gross profit amounted to $42 million compared to $36 million in 2022. On slide 8, we have a breakdown of our cash margin. The cash margin from our royalties reached $39 million. The cash margin from our streams amounted to $16.5 million, for a total in Q1 of $55.5 million compared to $47.5 million last year. And on slide 9, we have a summary of our balance sheet position. Our cash balance stood at $119 million. We held equity investments valued at $494 million. The revolving credit facility was drawn by $134 million. For a net debt position of $15 million at the end of Q1, compared to $57 million at the beginning of this quarter. Our available credit under the revolving credit facility was approximately $615 million, including the accordion. And finally, as a result of our strong margins and cash flows, we increased our quarterly dividend by 9% to 6 cents per share starting this quarter. I will now turn the call back to Sandy for a company review of our assets and the near-term catalysts.
Thanks very much, Fred. So look, I will be brief, not going through all these slides. I realize today is a busy day for most people, and some of these slides you're used to seeing from us. I will pick out a few things that happened during the quarter that I think are relevant to talk about, and then make way for questions as soon as possible. In doing so, I'll skip past slides 11 and 12 if you're following on the deck, and pause on slide 13 for a second to talk about Canadian Malartic. So overall, in the quarter, I would say a little bit lighter in terms of our deliveries from Malartic in Q1. Certainly made up by other assets overall, that great quarter that Fred just walked you through. I think some of that has to do with just, you know, the underground, the first stopes in the underground being later in the quarter than expected. The first production blast at Odyssey South was in late March. Agnico, our partner, is expecting 50,000 ounces of underground contribution this year. Other progress includes the shaft sinking, which has now commenced. So good progress there overall. We expect good news over the course of the year. I would remind people that from a global perspective, you know, throughput has been reduced down from circa 60,000 tons to 51,500 tons per day by Agnico intentionally to kind of optimize the transition. Now that the last truck of ore has come out of the Canadian Malartic pit, and mining has transitioned completely to the Barnett pit and the underground. We hope that transition back to full run rate is in the near term. I think they last talked about it being 2024, early 2024. We'll see how that progresses. But overall, still a phenomenal asset doing phenomenal things for us. That's on the day-to-day side. More in terms of the future of the asset, you've heard us talk about it. You're hearing some of those same updates, which are phenomenally important for us in terms of filling the mill, growing the resource, looking at new mine plans. So in terms of the rest of this year, and it's amazing that we're already in May, but looking forward to that update, a site visit by Agnico that's being run, which many of you probably will be on in June. So looking for the exploration update and kind of broader update that accompanies that. that event, and then later in the year, the new study, which will hopefully start to fill in some of the puzzle pieces with respect to how exactly that mill and that complex are going to be optimized and maximized. So a lot of good news, We expect that news to be good to flow throughout the course of the year. excuse me, jumping to slide 15, touching on some of the other core assets, starting with Mantos. You know, a good quarter overall, I'd say, at Mantos. We saw Capstone, our partner, talk about some preventative maintenance that they took, that they undertook in Q1 to increase reliability. Over the quarter, throughput averaged just over 16,000 tons a day versus just over 15,000 tons a day in Q4. Importantly, there was good signs of that progress in February, where the average was 19,000 tons a day. So I think we're getting there. Our partner's getting there. And importantly, in our last discussions and in their last public disclosure, they talked about expectations to get to that steady state consistently in, you know, I'm quoting now, in the very near future. So hopefully that maintenance that was undertaken in Q1 sets them up for a strong three quarters ahead. At Eagle, it was a good quarter, a good Q1, just shy of 38,000 ounces produced versus 24,000 ounces in the same period last year. This is the first quarter where they ramped up to stacking year-round. So I think they showed that they can do that successfully. So that's a big step forward for the asset in terms of reaching steady state. With a good Q1 behind us, that bodes well at Eagle. That bodes well for the rest of the year. So kudos to the team there. And similarly, at Eleanor, a good Q1. 66,000 ounces produced there in Q1 versus 46 last year. And really, I think the upshot of that is an increased, not focus, but increased success rate, I guess, in terms of recruiting. And less absenteeism, resulting in just higher mill throughput. I think that was an operation, a fly-in and fly-out operation that was significantly more challenged than perhaps others throughout the COVID period and the overall flux of people in the mining sector from an employment perspective. So good to see them get a handle on that and hopefully continue to drive forward. I will jump now to slide 18 to touch on a handful of the positive developments in the development portion of the portfolio or the new assets perspective as well, maybe starting with CSA. Good progress on that transaction closing over the course of the last couple months in particular. If you're following the metals acquisition story, they've now filed their F-4 statement, which I believe is blessed by the SEC or will be imminently. They've announced their PIPE financing, which they can continue to grow, but at least has the basics of what they need to get a transaction done. And our understanding is we'll be announcing a shareholder vote date in the extreme near term. So everything they're driving towards a successful outcome for them and obviously then for us. So we look forward to that that transaction taking shape here still over the course of Q2 is our expectation. excuse me, at Windfall, a very successful transaction with the joint venture that was announced with Gold Fields, huge endorsement of the project by a senior company, a significant de-risking of what is a very important asset in our development portfolio. And I've said for a long time, that Windfall is an asset that matters in the sector. There have at times been doubters or question marks about that, but the size, the grade, the upside in Canada, as I said, all that matters. And so it's good to see others see things the same way and good to see a fully financed asset in our portfolio moving forward. I think as well, the combination of skill sets there to build, operate, explore, permit, bodes well, given that there's still a very underexplored camp. And it was positive to see Gold Fields seeing it the same way, talking about a lot of upside on the immediate deposit, but also, on strike and at depth, but also on the broader land package. So overall, a win-win-win, and we look forward to seeing that partnership develop and hopefully intensify their work there on the asset. Maybe next, touching on Hermosa a little bit, we're still driving towards an FID point this year on Taylor. Hermosa is made up of Taylor and Clark. But worth noting that Hermosa was added to the FAST-41 list by the DOE, Department of Energy. FAST stands for Fixing America's Surface Transportation Act, so essentially an expedited review. Worth noting that Taylor is largely permitted. It has, its water use permits, its aquifer protection permits. It needs other minor permits along the way, but it's largely advanced in that process. But what we see there as a positive is obviously in relation to things like Clark, which is the battery-grade manganese separate portion of the deposit. But also in time, I think just the expedited review potential for all of Hermosa, in time, I think leads to a better pathway forward to the Forest Service ground, which is another layer of upside there on the broader land package. So all that is good news, and as I said, the biggest catalyst point there would be the FID point, but a significant amount of investment being made by South32 there even prior to that this year. Maybe jumping to slide 19 to touch on Casino a little bit. If you hadn't been following that story in early April, Western Copper and Gold announced a circa $20 million investment by Mitsubishi Materials. For about 5% of the company, Rio Tinto maintained their pro rata with a small top up to keep them at 8%. So good news there in terms of the broader collective that is supporting that asset and that company. This is a very good copper gold porphyry that can be built, and in my opinion, should and will be built. These investments don't tick that box fully in terms of a shovel in the ground or anything close, but certainly it's very promising to see that collective forming around Western Copper, hopefully in time a coalition of the willing. So that's an important asset for us that's moving forward in the background. I guess with that, I will just highlight slide 21, which you've seen versions of in the past. We've updated the slide more recently, so I'm not sure everyone's seen the updated version, to take into account another 1.1 million meters of drilling in 2022. So a sixth year in a row, if you squint and round, where we've been on average over a million meters or at a million meters, depending on how you want to look at it. And obviously I touched on some of the highlights that are coming out of that work, but there are many, many others. And if you look at slide 21, you see a story of a year ago, it was significant additions to the resource base. This year it was significant movement in the quality of those resources with a lot of ounces moving from M&I to a significant P&P increase. So we'll continue to see that ebb and flow, but just a lot of good work being done by our partners that we are and our shareholders are benefiting from. And then on slide 22, just a recap of where we're trading. We've had a good start to the year. Not one we're satisfied with, but we've had a good start to the year. We've outperformed, but really we're still just making up ground in our minds. Importantly, the underlying NAV keeps growing based on our partners' efforts, some of which I just highlighted, as our asset base continues to improve, and as our assets are hugely important to most, if not many, or all of our partners who are advancing them. So that's the end of what I wanted to touch on, at least formally. And certainly, operator, happy to take questions. This time around, we do have some questions on the webcast. If it's all the same, you can put your questions through the call. If you put them through the webcast, you have to type them in. We do see them. We'll probably get to those after those that are on the phone live. But operator, over to you to see if there are any questions on the live call.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touch-tone phone. You will then hear a 3-tone prompt acknowledging your request. And if you would like to withdraw from the question queue, please press star followed by 2. And if using a speakerphone, we do ask that you please lift the handset before pressing any keys. Please go ahead and press star 1 now if you do have any questions. And your first question will be from Ralph Profiti at 8 Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Thanks for taking my questions, Sandeep. Just firstly on the, you know, the MD&A disclosure about stronger GEOs through the rest of the year, and I just want to kind of see if I have it right that the combination of CSA plus Mantos Blancos plus Malartic is kind of covering the bulk of where, you know, we're trending in terms of the first half, second half split, if I have that right, or if there are any other assets that you see that could, you know, sort of complement that stronger GEO get to year end.
No, look, I think that's largely correct. I would include Eagle in that mix, even though they had a good quarter. You know, seasonally, it wasn't, you know, it's still going to have a stronger rest of the year, we believe. And if you look at things like CB, that was one that had a tougher Q1. They had some equipment issues that have been resolved, so we expect to see some progress there. But overall, I think the crux of what you said is accurate.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And I wanted to come and maybe ask a question on the deal pipeline. Sandeep, we've seen this kind of $2,000 an ounce gold price uptick. You know, we don't know if it's sort of sustainable or we're going for higher levels here. If we do, would you expect to see some go-ahead decisions on growth projects that are in the gold pipeline as sort of a source for more deal-making? Or would you see, you know, the potential for opportunistic M&A, you know, using royalties to fund M&A as a mechanism for the next few deals in the pipeline?
Look, I think it's both. I think it's all of the above and others. Certainly, a $2,000 gold price is nothing to whine about. So, you know, we're optimistic about the future, but I think we're very comfortable with where the price is now. It does lead to exactly what you said, which is, you know, go-ahead decisions on assets, significant funding for the right assets, maybe not all assets in this market, but the right assets. You've seen deals, Windfall is an example of that. You know, development company, you know, M&A transactions haven't been in vogue for a while as people have focused on production. But I think, you know, in a world of finite assets, we're seeing that start to change as well. I think that does bode well. I think the other thing I would add is just generally, you know, whilst you're right, I still think even at $2,000 gold in the mining sector and in the entire economy, I think we're seeing a tighter crunch on credit and access to credit, access to debt, both access to and cost of, and that's pushing people back towards us and our business as well. So we're kind of in a sweet spot here where not only are commodity prices very attractive, but there's, you know, there's still just not that much capital, both equity and debt, to fund what the sector needs, and that's what historically the royalty and streaming sector has bridged for. So I do see that pipeline getting better, not worse.
Good. Okay, that's good context. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
No problem, Ralph. Thank you.
Next question will be from Adrian Day, investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. How are you? I have two questions, if I may. The first one, a broader question. I think I heard 67% of your revenue from gold. Are you comfortable with that kind of mix, or how low would you be comfortable with gold going? That's the first question. And then the second question, I just wanted to clarify something, if I may. Your royalty on Malartic, is it actually on Malartic, the ground, or does it cover other throughput from the mill?
Okay. Hi, Adrian. Yeah, happy to cover both those questions. Good questions. So look, with respect to the metals mix, yes, it was 65% for the quarter. That was roughly consistent. When you look at gold and silver, you add another 20-some-odd percent. You know, that's the crux of our business, and that's not changing. Overall, if you look at us kind of on a near-term basis or a longer-term NAV or longer-term production basis, you kind of end up in the 70-20-10 type of split, you know, 70 gold, 20 silver, 10% other. Right now, that 10% other is made up of diamonds. But as we've talked about in the past, you know, those are shorter lived and less important to us, and those will, as they fizzle out, they'll be replaced by 10%, a 10% other that is made up primarily of base metals and copper. So that's the split we feel comfortable with. That's how we're made up right now, and our focus will continue to be on those primary objectives. With respect to Malartic, excuse me, and you can pick up some of this on slides 13 and 14, we have both, I guess. So we have a royalty on Malartic that is 5% of the open pit. On slide 13, on the bottom left, you'll see what it translates to on the underground deposits. But based on the current mine plan that Agnico has put out, it's about 4.5% on the underground. And the more East Goldie they find, the more that will trickle up as well. But 5 on the open pit, 4.5 on the underground is a fair way to look at it right now. Outside of that, we do have a royalty on the mill. So we have those royalties that I just described on everything that is Malartic that was sold to Agnico and Yamana 8 years ago. Anything else that goes through the mill that they're talking about, we would get a 40 cent per ton mill royalty on. And when there is 40,000 tons of free capacity in the mill, that's going to be important. That's useful.
Yeah.
But importantly as well, or more importantly, some of those sources of extra mill feed that they're talking about putting through there include Upper Beaver, potentially other resources like Upper Canada in Ontario. And on Upper Beaver, we do have a 2% royalty as well. So we would get the double dip on the mill royalty and the 2%. So maybe a lot to unpack there. But the good news is in aggregate 15 million ounces that have been delineated in the underground so far, we would have an aggregate, 4.5% royalty, and we have other sources of catalyst that they put additional material through that mill. So hopefully that's clear, Adrian, answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I honestly didn't realize you had the royalty on the surcharge on the mill throughput, so that's great.
Yeah, look, I mean, it was clear even to the team, 9 years ago that mill, a 60,000 ton per day mill in the Abitibi, is a valuable resource. It hasn't had a day of spare capacity or a ton of spare capacity in the last 10 years of mining the Malartic mine. But in time, it will, and we, like Agnico, fully believe that it will become the center of gravity in the Abitibi for anything that either is not viable on its own or just would be made more viable if it didn't need a standalone mill. So, yeah, no, it's all good news. And as I said earlier, the updates that we're expecting and kind of expecting pretty soon now, the year does fly by in June, and at the end of the year, I think will be good gates to go through in terms of how Agnico is thinking about that whole picture.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Adrian.
Thank you. Next question will be from Kerry Smith at Haywood Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Sandeep, do you think, based on your analysis, that you will be funding that copper stream on the mine, see it with Metal Corp, or how are you sort of viewing that today?
Yeah, look, I mean, my analysis is less important. Their analysis matters more. This is their right as a backstop. In all of our conversations, so with that caveat, I would say in all of our conversations, we see them valuing that copper stream, i.e. valuing the existence of it in their funding stack, and we do see them taking some of it. Now, that remains to be seen, and it remains to be seen how much they take. But yeah, I'm optimistic that we'll be able to fund a good chunk of that. And either way, that determination will happen here in the very near term.
And do you think that when they decide that would be on closing, or do you think that would be a subsequent event? I guess it would be on closing probably would be your expectation.
Yeah, so the gate they need to go through is their shareholder vote, which, as I said, they're going to be setting a date here for imminently. And expect that date to be basically very early June, barring any kind of unforeseen circumstances. Once that vote happens, they'll know what their redemptions have been in the SPAC. They'll know what their pipe is by then. And then the gap, if there is one, will be made up of other sources, starting with the copper stream. So, yeah, it's all going to flush itself out here in the next several weeks.
Okay. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
No problem. And look, I fully admit, and this is to no fault of anybody's, this has been a long transaction. The team there at Mac, Mick McMullen and his team, have done a phenomenal job of stick handling what is a very complicated transaction, given the size of it, the moving pieces, the copper price dip would be an understatement that was felt over the course of 2022. But it's really nice to seeing this come out of that extended period at the right time for them, at the right time for us, and look forward to getting that done.
Thank you.
So thanks a lot, Gary.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad. And your next question will be from Cosmos Chu at CIBC. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks, Sandeep, Fred, and team. Maybe first off, two questions on taxes. Sounds like the global minimum tax might actually happen, maybe sometime in 2024. Have you run through an analysis in terms of what the potential impact could be for Osisko Gold Royalties and anything that you can potentially share with us?
Sure. Hi, Cosmos.
Hi.
I can start and do my best tax impersonation. And Fred, you can shout me down afterwards. But look, we have obviously been tracking that file for the last, how long has it been? 2 years, 18 months at least. And first and foremost, as you would know, we have the least, we just have more royalties and streams. So by fact, we have the least amount of stream, international stream exposure. So if it were to apply, it would have what feels like a pretty minimal impact to us. But more importantly, we do not meet the minimum threshold to be caught in that 15% global minimum tax. It's based on one of the pillars is based on revenues of at least 750 million euros. And whilst we hope to get there one day, we are not there yet. So it looks to us like it trips up some of our larger peers, but not us. If that changed, as I said, I revert back to the start of my comment, but right now there have been no discussions to change that threshold, that pillar. So we don't see it impacting us the same way it would be impacting some of our peers, as you rightly point out, looks like in 2024. Fred, did I miss anything important there?
No, you're 100% correct, Sandeep. Okay.
And even with the potential silver stream from CSA and the copper stream potentially from CSA, you would still fall under that number.
Yeah, look, what are we at, Fred? 200 and some odd, 220, 225. Yeah. we would need to have quite a bit of success from a revenue generating potential to be at 750 million euro. Don't discount us, but it might take us a little while to get there.
I believe in you, Sandy. You'll get there.
And
then my second question on taxes, I guess last night, you recorded an expense, income tax expense of 8.4 million. But in terms of your adjusted earnings, you adjusted out $7.46 million, a big chunk of it. Could you maybe remind us of the rationale for that adjustment once again? I think you do it every quarter. I just want to get a reminder.
Sure, Fred. I've exhausted my tax impersonation. If you want to pick that up, essentially, Cosmos, it has to do with deferred taxes. But why don't you go ahead, Fred?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We adjust the adjusted earnings for deferred taxes right now. So these are not cash taxes. We had approximately $900,000 of cash taxes paid in Q1, mostly on withholdings from foreign revenues. So you're correct. That's an adjustment that we've done in the past to exclude the deferred taxes, which are not right now taxes payable, but more an accounting thing.
Yeah, okay. And that will continue to be the case for what looks like the rest of this year, at least. Maybe by the tail end of this year, we might have some minimal taxes payable, barring new investments that are made. And then that starts to change a little bit 2024 and thereafter. But But yeah, that's the answer for now, Fred. Sorry, Cosmos.
Yeah, great. And then maybe just switching gears a little bit, Sandeep, great to see that you've increased your dividend by 9.1%. It kind of shows how strong the company is. My question is, you know, if I work it out correctly, your share price has gone up this year, as you mentioned. I still work it out to a 1% dividend yield. I forget. Is there a number that you're trying to get to in terms of dividend yield, or how do you look at, you know, increases, frequency of increases to dividend and whatnot?
Yeah, look, your math is about right. Maybe just a tick above that. Look, we were due for an increase. We've got the cash flow. The cash flow is growing. Last year, we took more of that and bought back stock that was just ridiculously cheap. We might do that again. So we're always going to find the balance in terms of capital allocation between investing in new growth, raising dividends progressively, and buying back our stock, or just building up a cash buffer to invest. So we've got the strength to do any and all of that. You know, our balance sheet is pristine at the right time, essentially almost zero net debt, or a trivial amount of 15 million Canadian. Yes, we do have to fund that TSA transaction, but plenty of room on our credit facility that we will use disproportionately for the foreseeable future, that and our cash flow to fund transactions. So we feel pretty good about it. You know, the payout ratio, had we done nothing, would have been, amongst the lowest, that we've had in our history, really. And we didn't think that was fair. We want to continue to reward shareholders, and their confidence in us, and the dividend is one way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great. And maybe one last question. You know, I saw that in your guidance for 2023 in terms of geos, you've included the CSA stream beginning retroactive to February 1st. Is that just part of the contract that you have in place? And then number two, when it does happen, am I going to see like a big bump? Like, are we going to catch up February and then also March? So there's going to be a one quarter where it could be 5 months worth of geos and revenue coming in. Is that how it works?
Yes and yes. So it is, the silver stream has an effective date of February 1st. So as long as the transaction closes, which we're highly confident it will, that's basically ticking towards us. So whenever the first quarter is that the transaction closes, and hopefully that's Q2, there'll basically be 5 months of production in that quarter.
Great. Thanks again, Sandeep and Fred and team. Those are all the questions I have.
Thank you.
As a reminder again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star followed by one. And at this time, sir, we have no other phone questions.
Okay, sorry, let me manage this. I think there are at least a couple questions on the webcast. I'm just keeping an eye on that. The first one, and I have to read these out, I believe, so bear with me. It's our first time doing this. Apparently some people just don't like the art of an old-fashioned phone call. But what are your stock repurchase plans? So I guess this kind of funnels back into the last question as well. As I said, we've always tried to – we don't have a strict mechanism or formula or equation we follow. We do track all of our options at all times, and we decide what the best use of our capital is when we're looking, staring at what our opportunities are in front of us. So just because we increased our dividend this time around doesn't mean we won't come back to stock repurchases. We'll look at what the market gives us. And look, a lot of days, even with our recent outperformance, a lot of days the best answer is going to be to get more exposure to Malartic and Mantos and Eagle and Windfall and Casino and Hermosa and go down the list. So that's just something we track as a team, and we try to make the best possible decisions with the information in front of us. So I believe that was the only question on the webcast, but if I'm lying, someone please shout me down, and I'm happy to be told otherwise.
Thank you, sir. We do have another question on the phone from John Tomasos. at John Tomaso's Very Independent Research. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Sandeep.
Good morning, John. How are you?
Well. So some of the different companies are having issues with cost creep. This morning we saw Seabridge filed, I think, for another $150 million royalty on top of the $225 they sold last year. I guess it's costing them a little more for their project. I was chatting with a Quebec exploration company the other day that shut down a camp in Quebec. The province requires every camp to have a nurse, and their nurse quit. They were making $225K. Newmont paid them more at Éléonore. It's getting kind of hard to figure out what costs of doing business are. Are you staying at your criteria or moving to things already in production that don't have to build the factory yet, or what's your best way of managing construction cost, timing, and uncertainty?
Yeah, look, John, I think there's it's an excellent question, and there's a lot that is continuing to happen in the sector. If there's inflation in the world, I have always said, then it's worse than mining, because mining is two things: it's people intensive and it's energy intensive. A little bit of relief on the energy side so far this year, but I don't see that. Those people issues are sticky ones, both in terms of availability of people, technical talent, and also what it takes to retain them. So we see that in our portfolio, in our set of assets. Thankfully, our partners are doing a phenomenal job dealing with it. You touched on Éléonore. I think they had a good phase of dealing with it. So we're fortunate that our assets are, maybe starting with our existing portfolio, we're fortunate that our assets are so important to our partners. When you go down the list, they genuinely matter. So we're seeing a lot of investment, time and energy and money into those assets to resolve those issues. So they are issues, but we trust our partners. They're some of the best in class, and we trust their motivations because they're so important to them that they will resolve them. Obviously, there's costs associated with that they have to deal with, but the assets are good enough that they can withstand it. As we look out, from here, I'd say a couple of things to your question. One is, all that does to me is, as a person who tries to simplify things, is it justifies elevated commodity prices for some time. That's good for us in our existing portfolio in terms of pushing forward assets. Our partners as well have always shown an ability to raise capital better than, I'd say, the aggregate market. And so our assets are being fed with the money they need to move forward. It's not always a straight line, and it's not always as quickly as you'd like. But I think if you look at our portfolio, it's better set up that way than most. So good news there. And yeah, as we look out, we always manage what we consider timeline risks. Those are our risks in the royalty sector. You know, when there's extra costs, we don't suffer, at least not immediately or directly. But delays, we do suffer from. So yeah, that hasn't changed our view, John. We've been pretty steadfast in the last few years that, yes, we will take on, and you've seen us take on some later stage assets when the returns and the asset quality is high. There's good assets. There's good room in our portfolio for an asset at any stage, but our larger dollars would be kept for either production or near term or line of sight to production, so that hopefully you're on the other side of that. You're never always on the other, you're never fully on the other side of that mechanism, but that would be, I guess, the first level answer to your question, John.
I apologize, Sandeep, if I'm repetitive. I had a long-winded CEO call me, and I couldn't hang up, and I missed the first part of your call. Could you give an update on the Amulsar project in Armenia, where I think you retain a 40% ownership stake in addition to the stream? And is it too much for the shareholders to hope that you get paid something for that 40% in the stock of the new owner, or incremental royalty or cash, or how do you think that's going to settle out?
it's not ground we covered, John. So happy to now. We didn't get into it. With respect to Amulsar, I would say, as I've said before, you know, we work diligently behind the scenes to find the last piece that is missing in the last 2+ years. There's been unfettered access to the site. We've seen the Eurasian Development Bank step in with a big check. We've seen the blessing of the government. We've seen all the things that we need to get re-excited about that asset, which is important to us, save the last piece, which is an operator and the last of the funding to take a project that's circa 70% built, complete it, and end up with a plus 200, you know, somewhere between a 200 and 250,000 ounce a year mine on the other side. So we work on that path. It's, you know, obviously $2,000 gold and all of the other positive developments that I mentioned are helping that. Until it's done, it's not done, but we continue to work on it. And it's an important de-risking event, one that, you know, it's one of those things I used to say it's a light switch that's off that we are very intent on turning back on. With respect to your specific question about the equity, you know, our primary objective is to see that stream reactivated. Whether the equity has value on top of that, you know, time will tell. That's the beauty of optionality in the gold sector. And with prices moving the way they are, we're not going to close that door. But first and foremost, I'd say it's fair to say that we're after value on the stream, which is why it was protected in that receivership process in the first place. Beyond that, time will tell.
Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. And at this time, Mr. Singh, we have no other questions. Please proceed.
Okay, and I'm figuring out my technology, and I can tell that there are no other questions on the webcast either. So thanks, everyone, for your time this morning. And maybe as a public service announcement, just a reminder that Sunday is Mother's Day, and as someone who has disappointed both their mother and their wife in past years, I plan on trying to break that streak. So hopefully you're successful in doing the same. So thanks again, and be well.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, this does indeed conclude your conference call for today. Once again, thank you for attending. And at this time, we do ask that you please disconnect your lines.